So on the last episode of the podcast, I told you I was going to have a list of all of the things that Merrick Garland and Biden's department, well, not all the things, but like a top 10 list, basically, of all the things that Merrick Garland and his Department of Justice could have taken over the course of the three and a half years from Merrick Garland, since he wasn't confirmed after Biden's inauguration for a few months there. But the things that likely routes of or choices of action that Garland could have taken that might have possibly resulted in a different outcome, in the sense that even though Trump was charged twice by the Department of Justice in Florida for the classified documents and in D.C. for January 6th, those cases didn't go to trial for various reasons. And again, so there's always been a lot of Merrick Garland criticism for not having done enough, for not having done the right thing, for not having done this or that. And generally speaking, I think the criticism it's not that criticism of Garland is unwarranted. It's that the specific things that people criticize him for are just unrealistic, largely. For example, like, why didn't Merrick Garland charge Trump the first day he was sworn in as attorney general? Well, that's because criminal investigations tend to take time, and you can file charges at a standard of proof that's probable cause. But when you get to a criminal trial, you have to have enough evidence to convict beyond a reasonable doubt. And there was not a significant enough investigation done, you know, over the course of the couple of months before Merrick Garland got there to arrest Trump, have him indicted, and have him convicted at a trial. So it was just going to take a little bit more time than that. Now, of course, there's always a counterbalance here between, like, hey, if you wait too long, look what can happen, because we saw the worst case scenario. It took 2 years for DOJ to get an indictment of Trump, and it never made it to trial in either case. So, yes, there is a balance that needs to be struck. But I've got some specific instances of things that likely should have been done, or at the very least could have been done. And even with this list, I can tell you, I'm not.
I know what could have been done. We could have got them motherfuckers from South Korea over here.
Look, so yes. Look, what happens is when you have an unexpected hiatus when it comes to recording the podcast, a million things happen. I mean, we had the fall of Assad's regime. There's an attempted coup in South Korea. I just, like, on and on.
Brazil, Bolsonaro got indicted.
Yes, it's absolutely crazy out here in these streets. But on to the top 10 list. So number 10, one of the things Merrick Garland's DOJ could have done, and this was likely before Jack Smith was special counsel, it could have charged the classified documents case in D.C. And again, like, could have brought the charges for, well, in terms of executing the search warrant on Mar-a-Lago, that could have been done months earlier. And he could have brought the charges in D.C. Now, there would have been, of course, an argument that because the majority of the crime took place in South Florida, the charges needed to be filed there. But you could also argue that the origin for the criminal activity was in D.C. And that he could have been charged in D.C. And that would have potentially avoided Judge Cannon presiding over the case and ultimately tanking it. Now, again, that's an argument that would have went up eventually to the Supreme Court. In all likelihood, we've seen how the Supreme Court kicks it. They out here playing Trump's, legal defense counsel. So it's possible they could have dismissed the charges. But again, you have that Mar-a-Lago search warrant executed, say, 3 months earlier. You get those documents, you get the charges filed in D.C. Judge Cannon doesn't hold up the process by engaging Trump's demands to look. So that whole legal fiasco with the execution of the search warrant that Trump filed in court, that delayed the investigation and ultimately the charges. He ran out the clock. So this would have been potentially a way to try to avoid running out the clock in multiple ways, but largely to circumvent Judge Cannon. Now, again, the Supreme Court probably could have been like, hey, wrong jurisdiction, dismiss these charges. It would have had to been refiled again in South Florida, and we could have ultimately ended up in the same place. It's entirely possible. I don't know. Number 9. Merrick Garland could have immediately appointed a special counsel. And get this, most people are saying, why didn't Merrick Garland appoint a special counsel in January of 2021? Well, he wasn't the attorney general in January or February or most of March, for that matter.
Well, Biden wasn't even inaugurated until almost the end of January. So,
yes. But so Garland didn't get confirmed until March. His deputies didn't get confirmed until closer to the end of the year. But one of the things Merrick Garland could have done, because we did find out last year that he initiated a small task force in secrecy inside the Department of Justice to go after, if not Trump, all of the higher ranking co-conspirators that would include likely members of Congress. And of course, the war rooms scattered around D.C. on January 5th and 6th. Now, we don't know the details of where that investigation led, but it eventually culminated with the appointment of Jack Smith's special counsel's office, who ended up ultimately indicting Trump on charges related to the coup. So theoretically, I think one of the things Garland was doing was to avoid publicizing the investigation for a couple of reasons, but largely because if it had become public that he was specifically investigating Trump and Trump's inner circle and his immediate co-conspirators, it would have caused them to change their behaviors and their actions and the way they communicate, and possibly led to them, deleting evidence from their phones, their emails, any other type of communications and such. But again, that's, one of the, that is one of the trade-offs. The investigation would have moved a lot faster in all likelihood. It would have been well-staffed. It would have been equipped to go after Trump the same way Jack Smith's office did. And on the flip side, the way he did ultimately result in charges, but it took longer. But again, one of the issues here is that Trump ran out the clock, and this probably would have sped up the clock. Although, again, if I would say it was going to take 6 months to a year minimum to invest, complete this investigation, or at least get to the point where there was enough evidence to convict Trump and his co-conspirators at a criminal trial beyond a reasonable doubt. And this would have at least sped up that clock. But of course, the Supreme Court likely was going to step in at some point, as they did, and find a way to not only delay the trial, but also institute a brand new set of rules when it comes to prosecuting presidents. And they did so in such a way that even if this, even if the clock hadn't run out, before this got to trial, in terms of presenting evidence, because they basically made a rule, they made new rules of evidence for presidents. Any decisions the court made in terms of Judge Chutkan allowing evidence into the record, that could have been appealed back up to the Supreme Court. And we could have just been going back and forth with this on loop for eternity, regardless of when the charges had been filed. So, look, again, it probably would have resulted in charges sooner, but it's no guarantee the end result wouldn't have been the same. Number eight, Merrick Garland should have fired Chris Wray and all of Trump's holdovers at the DOJ and FBI the second he was confirmed to be the attorney general. Now, this one, like, clearly, Merrick Garland, I don't know. Obviously, he has the power to, ask President Biden to fire the FBI director. But, Biden made it clear that he was going to let Chris Wray stay on in an attempt to bring the nation back to some semblance of normalcy. But the argument I would make is, in terms of all the criticism directed at the DOJ for what they did and did not do in terms of going after Trump and his cronies, largely the DOJ and specifically Merrick Garland were a lot more aggressive than the FBI wanted. And there was a lot of consternation between the two agencies, and it was in all likelihood. So, like, in terms of executing the search warrant, it was the FBI that didn't want to execute the search warrant. And then they were the ones that didn't want to go in with the uniforms and all of this. And they tried to delay the search as long as possible. It was Merrick Garland himself that signed off on the search warrant and told them, hey, go get the shit. We have numerous instances of former FBI officials who were appointed under Trump doing things to delay the investigation. Now, you could argue that, hey, maybe they wanted to, you know, not put themselves in a position to face Trump's wrath should he be reelected. And that's a legitimate concern. But also, you probably just had a bunch of dudes who worked for Trump who were trying to make sure he wasn't brought up on charges, doing what they could within legal limits to delay the investigation.
The thing about Biden and Merrick Garland, they came around about the same time in politics and their respective jobs, in that they're kind of centrist. They believe in bipartisanship. They believe in that we're not there anymore, but they were still trying to play by the rules that are no longer there. And so that was the faults in their decision making, because they were going at it as if they were dealing with rational people in a rational time, and also holding out hope is what I think, that somebody held on to those principles and valued the rule of law and constitution above. And then you soon found out that everybody's a fucking sycophant. And also at the end of the day, it didn't matter what they did. So if somebody, it's like if you have a significant other who is always accusing you of cheating, and you're not. And then one day you get fed up, not saying it's right, but you get fed up and you're like, fuck it, I'm gonna go cheat because I haven't cheated, but I'm being accused of it anyway.
Yeah,
and
well,
I can't
anyway.
Get no motherfucking sleep, bitch about to pour some hot grits on me. Like, I can't take this anymore. So, you know, if I'm gonna get scalded, I may as well get the benefit of, may as well say, okay, I did it. You know what I'm saying? So
no,
it's like there was going to be nothing.
With all the accusations of Biden weaponizing the Justice Department and the FBI, he should have just weaponized the Justice Department and the FBI. Not weaponized, exactly. But yes. Like, you know, even if it came to the point where it seemed like they might be super aggressive, fuck it, be super aggressive, because this was a serious issue. And like, again, no one would have faulted Biden for coming out and saying, I'm firing, or I'm asking Chris Wray for his resignation. He was in charge of the FBI. When the attack on the Capitol took place, the FBI received numerous credible threats that an attack was imminent. They failed to act. Chris Wray deserves to lose his job.
They should have also brought fucking Michael Flynn back to active duty and had his ass court-martialed.
For sure.
Because I shouldn't be paying his $400,000. My tax dollars shouldn't be going into paying Finn's fucking pension while he's left for years to just run around being a traitor.
I'm with you there. And like, just the way that Trump was going around trying to recruit everyone under his employ to help him with January 6th, there's absolutely no question that he tried to ask Chris Wray. Number seven, Merrick Garland should have charged the fake electors with conspiracy to commit forgery / defraud the United States. I think this would have been the easiest possible charges to prove. Were the fake elector documents forged? Yes. Were they sent in to government agencies in an attempt to change the outcome of the result of the 2020 election? Yes. Open and shut. Conspiracy, somewhat difficult to charge, but I think in terms of forgery, you got them cold on that, and a lot of hands touched those fake elector
certificates. Including Senator Ron Johnson.
Absolutely.
For three seconds, according to him.
And I'm fairly certain that the immunity granted upon Congress in terms of the speech or debate clause section of the Constitution does not confer to attempting to use forged documents to subvert a presidential election. I think that would have been pretty open and shut. Could have got that done in months. But again, that likely would have required a special counsel, because I don't think the route that Merrick Garland's investigation took got to the fake elector plot for, you know, months after his appointment. Number six, should have conferred with the January 6th committee and made sure that they shared their evidence with the Department of Justice and the FBI. And the reason for that is, so if everyone who's been accusing, the Department of Justice for waiting around for the January 6th committee to do their work before they made any moves, you're wrong. That investigation into Trump and his cronies started, you know, approximately April of 2021. One of the issues that held of the department, though, is the January 6th was also going around taking these depositions and collecting evidence. And what you can't have is the department filing charges against Trump and other co-conspirators. And then it comes out that these other witnesses have testified to a government body, and then the testimony differs. And then if there's any sort of inconsistencies, you know, Trump and his people were going to get off, and they decided to hold off on that information until they finished their investigation and held hearings, which made the department look bad. But instead of like encouraging the department to investigate leads that they had that maybe the department didn't, and they tried to be selfish with the information. Now, again, like, you got to take your ego out of this. If you're the Justice Department, you got to go to them and be like, hey, this is why we need this. We need to deconflict, and we need to make as many moves as soon as possible to make sure that Trump doesn't run out the clock. So in that regard, yes, the DOJ should have, you know, maybe done some reaching out, but like, I'd hold the January 6th committee responsible for sending on as much information as they did for as long as they did, which helped Trump run out the clock. So you can kind of, in that regard, I think the blame is largely on the January 6th committee, but sure, DOJ, they should have took some initiative on that. Number five, they should have immediately held voluntary interviews with Trump administration officials and campaign staff. If not, you know, the second that Biden took office, when Merrick Garland was confirmed to be the attorney general. Now, what I mean is the same way that Robert Mueller in his investigation, once he was appointed, he went around talking to Trump campaign staff and people who worked at the White House, gathering information and getting people on the record about what they knew or what they had witnessed. Got that on the record. There were numerous people caught up in that investigation in those voluntary interviews who ended up lying. And what happened? Merrick Garland, or rather Robert Mueller, basically offered them an agreement where if they cooperated, they would get hit with the 1001 charge, which is basically lying to a federal agent, largely end up getting probation in exchange for cooperating in the investigation. DOJ should have like looked at what happened in that particular investigation and employed those same tactics to get everyone on the record. They likely would have had cooperating witnesses, because people lie, and they would have had like a clear insight into the Trump campaign and the Trump administration in their attempt to overthrow the government on January 6th, which likely would have sped up the process, which would have meant, you know, charges far sooner than when they actually occurred. Number four, Jack Smith's special counsel's office should have moved for the recusal of Judge Cannon for her interference in the execution of the search warrant, and just the way she handled all of the issues regarding pretrial proceedings down in Florida. It was a whole fucking disaster. She basically created her own shadow docket, where, after saying she wanted everything, she wanted just like a level of clarity in all of her motions and whatnot. And she ended up basically making it impossible for anything to be filed in public on the docket, which means she got to make all of her decisions in private. Everything that was communicated in terms of trying to make the trial go forward was just hidden from public view. I mean, it was a whole disaster. She got overturned by the 11th Circuit twice and was likely on her way to being overturned a third time.
Yeah, but she learned from that. And that's why she started being real careful with the things that she said, to not give it a chance to go and be taken to the 11th Circuit again.
Yeah. Special counsel's office should have just moved to have her thrown off the case, because we knew where it was going. So when, you know, the charges were first filed, we talked about it on the podcast quite often, but once it became clear that Judge Cannon was never going to let that go to trial, how often did we, like, you know, other podcasts, and kudos to them, because, you know, we deserve to understand like the process and how it plays out. But, you know, a lot of other legal podcasts were going over every development in the case in Florida. And I was like, hey, man, we're not talking about this again until it's clear it was going to trial. And it never went to trial, so we never talked about it again, because, you know, I told you guys,
pretty much,
it's not going to happen with Judge Cannon on that case. And she was basically installed after Trump lost the election in his district, to ensure that any Trump related cases that went before her got squashed, and she did her job. So, I mean, you know, good win for Trump. But like, again, so there was there's this show Foundation on Apple TV. I mean, I don't care if you watch it or not, but there is a fantastic quote from a character in that show who that says you cannot play chess with someone who's willing to set the board on fire.
That's pretty cut and dry, full stop.
And the issue, largely speaking, surrounding the failures of the Justice Department to hold Trump accountable, all revolve around the fact that they were playing chess, and Trump and his co-conspirators in the Supreme Court and Judge Cannon and Republicans in Congress were willing to set the board on fire. And look, it worked out for them. So number three, charge all of Trump's co-conspirators in Congress. I think this one's pretty straightforward. Trump was the only one involved in the fake elector plot on January 6th. Like, you know, there were multiple arms of the coup. One was the violent insurrection. The other one was the fake elector certificates to give Mike Pence an opportunity to either certify those or delay the certification of the 2020 election to a point in which the states could decide. And, you know, I think the rule there is state legislatures basically make the decision. And because Republicans have a majority, they could have handed the election to Trump. Like, charge everyone who was aware in that regard of the plot.
I mean, and the way that they move so quick, and like Michigan, Arizona, and what other state? It was one other state. Was it Colorado or Georgia?
Georgia, yeah.
I think Georgia. But they really, it pretty much was a slam dunk. And that would have been a good place to start.
Now, I don't. Here's the thing. So you charge members of Congress that, like, the pretrial proceedings are going to play out over the course of years. You probably weren't going to get them to trial before the election. But again, what it would have done is got information out to the public. It would have painted Republicans into a corner, and it likely would have decided the election in favor of Democrats, which in turn would have given the Department of Justice more time to prosecute these fuckers and get Trump. So. Yep. I understand the plan here was to indict Trump, get the slimmest possible indictment that you think has the least amount of issues to get it to court before the election. It didn't work. And at the very least, once it became clear, after the Supreme Court stepped in, after Cannon dismissed the charges in Florida, that, hey, like, this ain't going to trial before the election, indict all the co-conspirators, at least get the evidence out into the public. Out into the public spotlight, because sunlight's supposed to be the best disinfectant, but apparently that was not the case. Number two, subpoena / charge Jenny Thompson for her role in the fake elector plot.
Yes, now, yes.
Back to the your opponents being willing to set the board on fire once it was clear that Clarence Thomas and a number of his other cohorts believe that they had impunity to step in and defend Trump in any manner that they see fit. It probably should have been a clear indicator that anything appealed out of these Trump cases that went to the Supreme Court is probably going to go in Trump's favor. And the way you combat that is you set the board on fire. So, you know, Jenny Thomas was in communication with numerous officials in swing states about the fake elector plot, which you kind of have to ask yourself, how the fuck did she even know? Right. And then also, she's married to a Supreme Court justice who's making decisions on these cases. You make her a witness or / a co-defendant, like, you basically eliminate any of Clarence Thomas, the ability of Clarence Thomas to weigh in on these cases. Public pressure would have mounted for him to recuse, if not resign. And there you go. You got either you have one less vote to rig the system for Trump, or you might even have another Supreme Court justice at this point, which would have in fact prevented the Supreme Court from stepping in and helping Trump and bailing him out in numerous ways. But, you know, again, lost opportunity, something they should have thought about and took action on. So I do, again, it's not a guarantee that this would have worked, but
It definitely would have sent a message.
It would have sent a message.
It would have sent a message, and more of a no one is above the law message, even before Trump to go, because she was very, very brazen, her arrogance. And then Clarence Thomas, this motherfucker sat on the bench for a decade and didn't say a fucking word, but he could not stop yapping like a goddamn canary after he started to feel emboldened and shit. And now he won't shut the fuck up.
Now he won't shut the fuck up.
And if nothing else, it would have distracted his ass because he loved him some Jenny. So
I think what it would have done most is put all of the conservative justices on the Supreme Court in fear of intervening in this. Yes. And putting a target
especially
on
Alito, which he would have deserved. And somebody weak like Kavanaugh would have made his ass think twice. See, Alito and Thomas, they don't give a fuck. However, Roberts is a squish. Kavanaugh's weak.
She is a unicorn in her own right. Like, she's super conservative.
She's made some decisions that have shocked me.
That's the other thing. There are, in some cases, principled decisions that she makes that don't necessarily align with what you think a far right conservative. But beyond that, the point really here is try and take as many pieces off the chessboard as possible to ensure, you know, the Department of Justice was able to carry out its goals, and it did not do that. And the number one thing, Merrick Garland should have done, it's fairly obvious once I say it. Is he should have charged Trump with obstructing Robert Mueller's investigation.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So Mueller made it fairly clear that Trump obstructed his investigation in numerous ways. A couple of specific instances you can go with, like
Trump's interfering with the federal investigation, obstruction.
Well, yes. Trying to have Mueller fired. That was one. Now, of course, it wasn't successful, but obstruction doesn't have to be successful to be a crime. Also lying.
Like, you don't have to get the money to have tried to rob a bank.
No,
you
know Mueller, what I'm saying? Mueller submitted Trump numerous written questions, and even in the written, in lieu of an interview, and even in the written questions, Trump lied. He could have charged him with that. And look, I don't know what Bill Barr did after the conclusion of Mueller's investigation to ensure that no charges would be filed. Like, I'm sure there were some shenanigans being played in DOJ on the record. Or at least, confidentially on the record, in terms of making it difficult to charge Trump. And one of the things Bill Barr did was he went to the Office of Legal Counsel to get an opinion saying that you couldn't file obstruction charges without a crime. And I know you're thinking, well, that's seals the deal. Trump wasn't charged. Well, that's not entirely true. Robert Mueller charged numerous people, including Russian agents and Trump co-conspirators. And Trump tried to obstruct the investigation that resulted in the charging of those people. So therefore, you're still in alignment with the OLC opinion. There were charges filed. Trump tried to obstruct that investigation. You charge Trump with that. You can do that within the first couple of months on the job, if not weeks. And that likely would have ended with a trial and a conviction before the end of 2022. So there were numerous, and again, I'm not saying that's 100% sure, but it would have been an opportunity, should have been done, likely could have been done.
He had a lot of spaghetti to throw at the wall. He could have gave it the old college try. It's not like he didn't.
Yeah.
It's not like Trump didn't when he was in office with Hillary. Hunter before.
No, they investigated Hillary Clinton right up until the day Trump left office.
Yeah, they did. He had like four fucking investigations like going on, and I was like reading that was like the Western District of Texas. One of them, he was like, bruh, there ain't nothing here. Like,
no,
nothing.
Now, so, I've been accused of being like a Merrick Garland glazer. I love Merrick Garland.
Well,
blah,
you
blah,
and
blah.
Allison both. Allison has been hanging in there, too.
No, but here's the thing. It's like I've been saying, like, it's not that Merrick Garland is above criticism. It's just the shit people be criticizing him for. It'd be stupid. And look, I just laid out a whole entire list of things that Merrick Garland, DOJ, even Biden himself could have done, including firing Chris Wray, since he's going to resign anyway, should have got him out of the paint and out of the way. And it's entirely possible the investigation and the outcome of the criminal charges would have been faster and maybe have ended in a different result. So it's not that I'm pro Merrick Garland to the point where I'm not objective. Like, I clearly have, some ideas about what could have been done differently and should have been done differently. Now, again, there's a cost benefit to all of these, possible actions. Like, there are ways that attempting to do those things could have backfired. But again, we live in a world of consequences, and sometimes to do the right thing, you got to deal with whatever potential fallout might exist.
Now what they need to do is just they need to release everything they can. And I think that they need to erase. They need to erase. They need to release the January 6th report because
Trump's going to
erase it.
Yeah, we're going to get the report in January. The problem is that there's a lot of information and evidence likely, obtained by the grand jury that can be released to the public without an order from the court.
Now, well, they need to release what they can, at least.
Well, I think Smith's going to do that, and I think they're going to find a way to make sure as much information as possible gets into the record here. But there's a lot of evidence that I would suggest that they go to Judge Chutkan and try and ask her to, unseal for the public since the case is being dismissed. But again, the possibility of doing that is if Chutkan orders that and that information is made publicly available, there could be arguments made in the future. Should there ever be federal charges against some of Trump's co-conspirators?
But you know what? I don't even care.
Yeah, you just want the information. Right now, the information
we gotta move like there is no 4 years from now.
Yes, we gotta move like the charges are gonna go away forever because in all likelihood, once Trump is in office,
they're gonna erase every fucking thing. They're gonna erase everything.
Yeah.
And so we need to needs to be, I don't care how they get it out there. I don't care if he hop on one of them motherfucking drones and drops it over the Hudson. Like, I don't care.
Hey, look, man, so much stuff happened while we were gone. I mean,
I got drone page swarms. 36. Like, I don't care.
The Republicans, top witness and trying to impeach Biden and lock up Hunter. He is apparently going to plead guilty to crimes of lying to the feds. I mean, it was wild out there. All right, so we had a crazy story last week where an accuser came forward a woman came forward accusing Jay-Z of rape during a party after the VMA Awards in 2000. And just like it's an insane story. Trigger warning here. Anyone who's been like a victim of sexual assault, this is probably tough for you to hear. Just want to let you take a second to turn off the podcast. If you
trigger
choose.
Warning.
Yes, we have a clip of the woman in an interview with the outlet here.
The night of the 2000s VMAs, she says a friend drove her from Rochester, New York to Manhattan, a more than 5-hour drive. Her attorney provided NBC News with the name of the friend who has since died. The woman says she spoke to Combs's limo driver who offered her a ride to an after party.
I stumbled upon Diddy's driver who told me that I was exactly what Diddy was looking for.
What did you think when he said that to you?
I thought it meant that I was just pretty.
She went to a White House, she says, where she spoke to musicians Benji Madden and his brother.
I'm talking to Benji Madden about his tattoo because, I have a really his about his tattoo that's the Last Supper because I have a religious background. So it was just something to talk about.
In a statement to NBC News, a representative of the Maddens confirmed that they did not attend the 2000 VMAs and that they were on tour in the Midwest at the time. At the after party, she says she had a drink that made her feel woozy. Then she says Combs and Carter took turns raping her while a female celebrity watched.
JC comes in and rapes me. Well, at that point, I was fighting, trying to get away from him. And he put his hand over my mouth and told me to stop it, cut the
After the alleged rape, she says she ran to a gas station where she called her father, who picked her up and drove her home.
We rode home in silence. He didn't ask me what happened. He didn't ask me what I did or where I was.
In an interview with NBC News, her father said he could not verify the claims. Quote, I felt like I would remember that, and I don't. I have a lot going on, but I mean, that's something that would definitely stick in my mind, he said. When we asked the woman about the contradictions in a phone interview on Friday, she said that she stands by her statements. I have made some mistakes, she said. Honestly, what is the clearest is what happened to me. The inconsistencies in her account of an incident alleged to have happened 24 years ago does not necessarily mean the allegations are false. The accuser's attorney, Tony Busby, said, because we have interrogated her intensely, she has even agreed to submit to a polygraph. This has been extremely distressing for her, to the point she has experienced seizures and had to seek medical treatment due to the stress. In a statement to NBC News, Sean Carter said, this incident didn't happen, and yet he filed it in court and doubled down in the press. True justice is coming. We fight from victory, not for victory.
All right, so, you know, we're in a post-Me Too movement era, right? And, you know, I'm in a position of, like, when women come forward and, you know, accuse other individuals of sexually assaulting them, generally speaking, you know, I want to be sensitive to that. I like to leave as much space for that as possible, because let's be honest here, you know, so many more women in the world, and specifically the United States, get sexually assaulted than ever come forward. So, you know, we got to take allegations like that seriously. And but I'm also in a position of, like, you know, generally speaking, if some regular rando on the street is accused of sexual assault, I'm like, you probably fucking did it, because there's absolutely no reason why a woman would make this accusation, generally speaking, without there being some truth to it. But, you know, and like, this might piss some people off, but I generally feel like if you're a celebrity and you're a man being accused of this, if there's no history of it in your past, and there's absolutely, like, no evidence, you know, over the course of your life or your, you know, the time you've been in a public space of being accused of things like this, I'm willing to, you know, give you the space to defend yourself as well. Because there are occasions where, you know, it's rare, but it does
happen.
And
that is fair. You know, that is fair. And more so, I would say, like, the lack of history, not that it's not possible, because absolutely somebody doesn't have a history.
Yeah, just because someone has,
doesn't
have a history,
doesn't mean it is. You know, someone isn't a killer until they kill. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
So that definitely, giving some grace. But his vehement denial, and he seemed really, and I was like, when I was reading, you know, his response.
Boy, so let's back up for a second, because that was just some context. So Jay-Z did put out a response on social media the other day. It wasn't even really a vehement denial. It was more so,
I felt like it was, but
he wasn't really, you know, attacking, like, the accusation as much as being like, dog, this is ridiculous. Y'all know I didn't do this. And he was mad. And, you know, typically speaking, you know, celebrities, wealthy individuals, they usually go through a PR firm or their lawyers when putting out a statement in regards to these allegations. But Jay-Z, it looked like he typed this up himself.
Like he typed it. Yeah, no, I get that.
Now,
where they'll issue this kind of generic denial response through their PR spokesperson for Jay-Z said. But this was like, he was like, give me that.
No,
bag,
give me
that,
my phone.
Give me that pen.
Yeah, let me
give
write
me my
this
phone.
Up. Yeah.
Give me my phone, you know?
It looked like something he said himself.
You know, as an SA survivor, I want to give everybody grace when they are a potential survivor, even Nancy crazy ass Grace, regardless of what I think about her. You know, I give her, you know, grace as well in that aspect. But yeah, but I can get, you know, what you're saying. I don't know. I've kind of where I am mentally with this accusation.
Yeah, let's talk about this one specifically, right? Because
just saying I'm in the same headspace as I was with the Kobe situation. So I'm when that happened. So
yeah, we don't have to rush the judgment on this one. We can let the facts come out. But like, so let's talk about some of her, you know, the interview specifically. So one of the things she said was, so she's from upstate New York. You know, she had a friend drop her off for the awards. She was 13 at the time. You know, again, look, whoever you want to talk about kids sneaking out and doing crazy shit like that, that it does happen.
That's 5-hour drive.
5-hour drive. So she's at the awards. She can't get in. She's hanging around outside. She's checking the limousine, seeing if she can get, you know, find someone that can get her access in. She runs into, I think she said she runs into Diddy's limo driver. He's like, I can't get you in, but, you know, you come to the after party if you want to. You seem like, you know, Diddy's type or whatever. So they take her to the party. She ends up in a room. Well, she ends up having some drinks. She gets woozy. I guess the assumption is there. She might have been drugged. I mean, Diddy's been accused of this. Like this, there's multiple instances of accusations of Diddy drugging, you know, guests at his parties in order to engage in some kind of sexually compromising position. They go into a room, you know, there's three celebrities there, Jay-Z, Diddy, and a female celebrity who's currently unnamed. She says she was sexually assaulted by Diddy and Jay-Z. And then she leaves the party. She gets to a gas station. She calls her dad. Her dad supposedly has to drive 5 hours to pick her up and take her home. And the dad says, hey, you know, I don't even remember this happening. I mean, I guess it's possible, but it seems like something that would stick out. And then she talks about, you know, seeing another celebrity at the party, having a conversation. It turns out that that individual was not actually in the state at the time. So there are some holes in her testimony. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and attack the woman, because generally speaking, even in terms of like false allegations, I just don't attack women. I mean, it's not ideal. While it's entirely possible that this happened, it's also entirely feasible, given what we know currently, that it didn't happen. That aside, what Jay-Z is doing here currently, and where, even if this allegation turns out to not have any kind of truth in regards to Jay-Z's participation, what it is Jay-Z paying a price for hanging out with some weirdos. That's what it is, right? So, you know, you friends with Diddy, you know, this is blowing up in terms of accusations surrounding Diddy. You're associated with the guy, like, So we talked about there's no history in terms of Jay-Z in anything, any sort of allegations of any kind of improper behavior in this regard. So you, in that respect, I give Jay-Z some space. But there's been all kinds of allegations for years now about Diddy. So you knew who you was rolling with in this.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I 100% believe.
Go. I was going to comment on that. That I 100% believe that Jay-Z knew. And you know, I remember them Video Vixen days, Double XL and Smooth Mag, and you know, the Gloria Velez's and the Corinne Steffens, and you know, back in the day, them was some times. And so he absolutely, I believe, knew. Maybe he didn't fuck with it like that, but he knew what the hell was going on, and he knew who Diddy was.
Yeah, let's make a delineation here, right? So, you know, in terms of the industry, you have associates that you work with, and through that, sometimes you become friends with those people. But then there's like an even tighter group. It's your crew, dog. It's like the people you roll with. Now, Jay-Z ain't like rolling with Diddy all the time. They didn't have that kind of relationship. But they were friends. They were close. They talked all the time. Like, you know, they talked about things between themselves, you know, that you know, Jay wouldn't necessarily talk about with other people. But here's another thing. So while, you know, Jay-Z is a victim of the people he associates himself with in this regard at this point, you know, he was also, he's currently married to Beyonce. I don't know how to even dissect this, but like, they've known each other since she was a teenager, like before she was an illegal adult. So, you know, that could possibly raise some questions about Jay-Z's particular.
And they've been
intentions.
Together, what, 20 years now, I think? When they got married, it's been a long time. I think somebody said, because I think that's when Beyonce's album came, when Bonnie and Clyde came out.
So they've been married for a while. He knew her before she was of the age of 18. Also, you know, working in the industry and was associates with Aaliyah when she was underage.
And then Dame Dash was dating her.
Yeah. Too. So look, you've got some questions about like the possibility of Jay-Z being interested in underage girls, potentially.
R. Kelly was outside in everybody's circle too.
Well, yeah. So R. Kelly and Aaliyah ended up getting married, but then she, you know, unfortunately is no longer with us thanks to a plane crash, I believe. And then, of course, you know, we know how R. Kelly was kicking it. Jay-Z and R. Kelly, I think they put out a couple of albums together. They went on tour. together. So now, whether or not Jay-Z actually was involved in this particular incident, like, you know, who am I to say? The evidence suggested likely not. But also on the other hand, due to put himself in this position where enough people can take these allegations to be credible because of who he been hanging around.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, like, I'm not the moral judge on this stuff. Like, I'm just some random dude on the internet with a podcast. But also, you got to be like, hey, man, like, you're a celebrity now and you're at a point where, you know, you wear the mantle of Black excellence, at least in terms of our entertainers. You're one of the few guys to make it out of the entertainment arena and step into the business arena and compete with the giants. You are up there. You sit at tables that very few of even the most popular artists will ever get to. And you've been hanging out with dudes that do weird stuff. Now, again, so, you know, Tony Busby, the lawyer representing
he's
the
representing woman, a lot of the accusers, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's
so,
like the Ben Crumb of the.
Yeah. Like, well, so. So he is probably most prominently known for representing numerous victims who filed lawsuits against Deshaun Watson, the former quarterback of the Houston Texans.
Oh, really?
Currently in Cleveland. Yeah. So he's and like, this is not necessarily to say that Busby is not a credible attorney, but
He's like the male Gloria Allred, because, you know, Gloria Allred represents a lot of celebrity accusers. Like, she,
yeah,
that's kind of her thing
now. So he's been accused of being like an ambulance chaser. He out here trying to get these checks, and he's probably taking on cases whether they have merit or not. That doesn't mean none of them have merit. That doesn't mean all of them have merit necessarily. You just have to judge each case individually by the facts presented. But so he's currently representing numerous women who have accused Diddy of similar activities as this woman's accused Jay-Z of. And like, weeding through that specifically, like, it's tough to try and figure out what sounds real and what doesn't. And I would just personally say, you ain't got to make up your mind on any of these cases. You can just wait until the decision's made before you can come to any conclusions. But in terms of Diddy, he absolutely out here doing some weird, nasty shit. And he is like, in jail is likely the correct outcome as far as Jay-Z is concerned. I don't know. And like, I don't know what the correct response is to being accused of sexual assault when you haven't done it, right? Like, when the accusations are not true, or
that is true. And that's just a sidebar really quick. But I remember back in, her name was Nina. I can't remember her last name. Michael Irvin.
Oh, yeah.
I was living in Dallas when that happened and when it broke. And of course, I'm in Dallas, so it's everywhere. And, you know, he was wild, you know, man liked to party.
No,
but
Cowboys was wild.
Behavior was not his stilo. You know what I mean? But yeah, but when the accusations came out, it was like, whoa. And then it turned out that it did not happen. So that was, you know, one of the most high profile that I can remember where it was really like just a blatant attempt to extort and lying and whatnot. And then, but it gave people some pause and people were kind of looking at him a little with some side eye because he did like to get down and party. You know what I mean? He was the
He did. Like the so Cowboys, they had him a whole little crib off on the side where they would just go kick it and bring the girls over. You know,
I would go to this place called the Cowboy Cafe.
We ain't gonna talk about that.
Okay.
I don't want to know. Yeah.
But I understand in that, and I'm reserving judgment on this. On this one, I do feel like I need more information. I'm not dismissing or discounting her experience.
Right.
Or what she has to say, but I'm also going to give him a little bit of grace. And I do want to see, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with being unsure and saying, you know what, I don't know what I think about this. I don't know.
Yeah, us personally, we can't speak for like the legal system, but just us personally, we do not, if you're listening to this podcast, you do not have to come to a conclusion one way or the other.
Yeah, and
because he got billions of dollars.
And whether or not, you know, Jay-Z was a perpetrator or participating in that act, it does not mean something didn't happen to her that night either.
And that's also true. Now, look, I don't want to talk about the woman's, you know, mental state or her emotional capacity, but, you know, clearly she's got some issues that she's been dealing with, and she's autistic. Now, again, like, autism is a spectrum, so I wouldn't make any necessarily judgments about, you know, her cognitive abilities in that regard.
But 24 years ago, it wasn't something that people really knew. And so when I'm thinking, it was like she was 13 at the time. Who was this friend? This friend had to be at least 16 because they had a car and a license, and they drove her 5 hours and then left her there.
Yeah.
So, and then I guess drove back home or wherever they went.
As crazy as that sounds, shit like that does happen. So I mean,
absolutely. But I'm just saying, so I'm like, who was this friend? How much of a friend were they that they left this 13-year-old girl? Because obviously they were older because they drove.
Well, the friend is deceased, so they're not going to, there's no way to get like a deposition from the girl, the friend, whether it be a man or a woman. I'm not particularly sure. But yeah, it's just, it's unfortunate. Now, what I will say again, so back to my point about not knowing how to respond to sexual assault allegations when you've done nothing wrong. I have no idea. But I can tell you, like, I have been privately accused of, you know, being inappropriate on the internet here in someone's DMs on formerly known as Twitter. Now, so the way that came about is, so, you know, an internet acquaintance of mine that I'm fond of started DMing me out of the blue one day. I was like, okay, hey, it's nice to talk to you. So we chatted for a few days back and forth, off and on. And then after about a week or so, she was like, the reason why I actually contacted you is because someone else said that you were being inappropriate in her DMs. So I just wanted to see, you know, if that could possibly be true.
How you rocked in the DMs.
Yeah, she was trying to see how I move out here in these streets. And
was she Nancy Drew?
No. I mean, but again, you know, this is that dilemma where women make these accusations. You want to, at the very least, you know, not demonstrably chastise them, but you want to take them seriously. But she was like, I will verify for myself. And, you know, because I wasn't DMing anyone when she told me that, I was like, well, yeah, that's total bullshit because I wasn't talking to anybody. And she's like, I figured that. And, you know, the way you've been acting lends credibility to the idea that she was just making this up and, you know, wrongfully accusing you. Now, I don't specifically know who the person was that did this or why they would even do it.
But she was giving you both the benefit of the doubt, it seems, I guess, that she was giving that person the benefit of the doubt, but also knowing you somewhat to a degree. And it didn't, I guess, jive with what her perception of you was or is. So they wanted to see if they threw a bone or what.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, she wanted to see if the girl was like what she was saying was even feasible. And it turned out that wasn't the case. Now, my response to that, because, it was a private issue. It's not like somebody was like accusing me openly and trying to take me to court.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I would have responded in that regard. But like in this case, I was like, I know I didn't do anything. So I was like, yeah, that's crazy. I don't know what was wrong with that girl. And I just say this, and I say that just to say this, like, it's entirely possible that I'm Jay-Z and somebody out here just in these streets, you know, the lawyer's trying to take advantage of a woman where something may have happened to her, but it didn't necessarily involve Jay-Z, and this was an opportunity for dude to get a paycheck. I have absolutely no idea. And all I can say is wait to find out. You don't have to rush to any kind of judgment whatsoever. The facts will eventually speak for themselves. And that concludes this episode of Pardon the Interaction.